Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. The Supreme Unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, and thus He relieved the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur suggests that the rishis like Shaunaka and others who were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sutta Goswami at Naimisharanya were not happy to hear about the Yadus dying in the madness of intoxication. To give them relief from this mental agony, Sutta Goswami assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, by which they had to take away the burden of the world. The Lord and His eternal associates appeared on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. He therefore called for some of the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve Him in His great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods, by the will of the Lord, relinquished their corporal bodies by fighting amongst themselves in the madness of intoxication. The demigods are accustomed to drinking the somaras beverage, and therefore the drinking of wine and intoxication are not unknown to them. Sometimes they were put into trouble for indulging in intoxication. Once the sons of Kuvera fell in the wrath of Narada for being intoxicated, but afterwards they regained their original forms by the grace of the Lord Sri Krishna. We shall find this story in the 10th canto. For the Supreme Lord, both the Asuras and the demigods are equal, but the demigods are obedient to the Lord, whereas the Asuras are not. Therefore, the example of picking out a thorn by another thorn is quite befitting. One thorn which causes pinpricks on the legs of the Lord is certainly disturbing to the Lord, and the other thorn which takes out the disturbing elements certainly gives service to the Lord. So although every living being is a part and parcel of the Lord, still one who is a pinprick to the Lord is called an asura, and one who is a voluntary servitor of the Lord is called a devata, or demigod. In the material world, the devatas and asuras are always contending, and the devatas are always saved from the hands of the asuras by the Lord. Both of them are under the control of the Lord. The world is full of two kinds of living beings, and the Lord's mission is always to protect the devatas and destroy the asuras whenever there is such a need in the world, and to do good to both of them. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Shri Shri Gornitai ki. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Salakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Miti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So today we're going to be speaking, and as Prabhupada was mentioning in the purport, about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. But before we start, I'm just going to give a kind of a brief introduction to the schedule of the class. As we all know, today is a very big day, because I think it was Neil Armstrong who said, "This is a small step for a man, but a big step for the humanity." So I think this could be applied in the similar fashion to the time when Prabhupada stepped on this on the Western, in the Western world, specifically in America, in the Boston Harbor. So small step for a man, but very big step for all of us sitting here and countless generations to come. But before I start, I would like to pay my respectful obeisances to all the Vaishnavas present here and those which are online. Vanchakalpa turupyascha kripa sindhu bhya eva cha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavbhyo namo namaha anantakoti vaishnavrindaki. So with the permission of devotees, we can start with the class. So as we can see from the purport of Srila Prabhupada, he was referring to the commentary of Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur that Sutta Goswami actually observed that the sages of Naimisharanya have been very disturbed. As we know, devotees or Vaishnavas, they are always seen as Patita Pavana, very, very merciful and very, very compassionate. So when someone is suffering, they actually suffer as well. So this is one point of observation. We can see that the sages of Naimisharanya have been feeling, they've been actually very disturbed, agitated, and they didn't really understand why those personalities, which are direct companions of the Supreme Lord, those which follow the highest of dharmas, the highest of dharma, are actually being annihilated in such a terrible way. So seemingly, in this age of Kali, bar fights, right? You go in a bar, you get drunk like anything, and you start a fight. That's pretty common thing in the modern Kali Yuga society. But if you apply this, try to imagine, apply this sort of activity to the highest of kings, to the highest of rulers, to the most dharmic kshatriyas, to those which always pay their obeisances to the brahmanas, those who always understand what is right and what is wrong. And these personalities start a fight very similar to a normal common bar fight. So that's why the sages of Naimisharanya have been disturbed. And that's natural. They've been disturbed. And in the answer to this disturbance, there's a very interesting verse in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this verse, basically, it's a commentary or it's a reflection of King Chitraketu. King Chitraketu was cursed by Mother Parvati. He observed something which was seemingly unnatural for a Vaishnava like Lord Shiva. He's seen that he was indulging in a very close proximity with Mother Parvati. And King Chitraketu, he understood this like, oh, this is not very appropriate. In front of all the sages, and he was discussing a variety of Vedanta topics. And King Chitraketu started laughing. He said, how is this possible? Look at you, you're such an elevated personality and you're in such a close proximity in front of all these sages with the woman. All the sages, they haven't been disturbed. Shiva, he was not disturbed. Mother Parvati, she cursed him. Again, background story to that, Prabhupada comments that this was actually, again, Lord Vishnu wanted to have King Chitraketu back to Godhead as soon as possible. Therefore, this curse happened. So in the similar fashion, this is what King Chitraketu responded to being cursed by Mother Parvati. He said, this material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, what is a curse and what is a favor? What are the heavenly planets and what are the hellish planets? What is truly happiness and what is actually distress? Because of waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. So many times through the pages of Bhagavatam, we see how curse is actually the highest of benedictions. Can anyone tell me any curse? Prabhupada mentioned one, the curse of Nala Kuvera and Managriva in the purport. Can anyone tell me one curse which actually was a great benediction? Vrichasura, that's Chitraketu. Yes? Anyone else? There's loads. The demons which have been killed in the Krishna pastimes, they've been cursed before. Can you make a can you make a, which one specifically, for instance? Putana, in previous life, she was a brother. She was a sister of Bali Maharaj, and she had this relationship. She wanted to have a son, Vamanadev, or the Supreme Lord as a son. Yes. So based on the envy, she was cursed. Okay, any other? Yes, Rasa Rajprabhu? Narada Muni was cursed that he cannot stop because he turned all the sons of Daksha into brahmacharis. So that's a big curse. That's definitely you should be cursed by Daksha. But it was actually a very good benediction because in this way he can constantly travel all around the place and constantly preach. Yes? Any other ones? Maharaj Parikshit, yes, he was cursed by the Brahmana boy Sringi that he would die in 1 week. But most of us, me specifically, would start freaking out. But he took it as a great boon and benediction just to absorb in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sankirtan Priyaprabhu. Sankirtan Priyaprabhu was mentioning that Lord Vishnu was cursed that he will have 10 avatars and these 10 avatars will appear in this material world. Okay. Gujruma Bihari Prabhu? Can you repeat that slightly louder, please?
King Nariga, he was cursed by a Brahmin to take birth as a lizard in the well. Because he gave away like a cow, whole herd of cows, but one he gave back again to another Brahmin.
Yes. Samuel? Jayan Vijay? Abhay Prabhu?
Gandhari cursed Krishna to destroy, that the whole Yadav dynasty would be destroyed.
Yes. So all these curses, which are actually in the Bhagavatam, are very interesting. Because when the sage is cursing someone, there's no difference between a benediction. It's just slightly the benediction takes... the benediction is sometimes quicker, but the curse takes sometimes longer. So in this way, Chitraketu Maharaj actually answered the disturbance of the sages of Naimisharanya. But today I would like to discuss more significant topic in the sense of the curse of the Yadu dynasty. How come that these elevated personalities, which been sadhaka siddhas, which been nitya siddhas, which been inhabitants of Svarga Loka, they've been cursed like this? In such a simple manner, for such a simple and easy offense. And we can see, again, the machination of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, how to deliver the Yadu dynasty? Krishna, after the battle of Kurukshetra, after the hundreds and hundreds of millions of soldiers, so many Akshahunis, which been burdening the planet, they've been kind of destroyed. And the prayer of Mother Bhumi was, please get rid of all these soldiers because they're really, really just constantly marching from one side to another and they're giving me so many difficulties. So Krishna said, yes, and this is done. It has been done by the battlefield on the Kurukshetra. But then, as mentioned in the verse, the thorn could be picked by another thorn. That one thorn was the Yadu dynasty. The Yadu dynasty been so powerful that they've been like demigods. They've been actually stealing paraphernalia from the demigods. Can anyone tell me which paraphernalia? And it's a big one. It's a building, actually. They steal... Yes, they steal the assembly house from the demigods. Such an opulent place. I mean, you can steal many things, right? But can you steal assembly house? That takes some power and some kind of a strength and also some kind of a management. I mean, how to steal assembly house? I cannot picture it. I cannot even understand. But Prabhupada and the Acharya has been commenting that just like the wind, by blowing, causes the friction of the bamboos, and these bamboos suddenly take the fire starts. So this is how Krishna operates. The bamboos, they've been representing the Yadu dynasty, and Krishna was that agent, that wind which was blowing through the through the bamboo sticks, and there's suddenly just a friction happen. So Krishna was thinking, no one can defeat the Yadus. No one. No one in the three worlds can defeat my family members. And actually, the Acharyas are commenting, not even themselves can defend themselves, defeat themselves. And I'll come to that point. Please keep this in mind, what I just made the statement, that not even the Yadus can kill another Yadu. And I will elaborate on this point in the end. So Krishna was thinking how to actually deliver them. So in this connection, we understand that the Brahmanas, they're naturally inclined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they are above mode of goodness, they constantly meditate upon the Supreme Lord. And in this way, what happens, they become a medium. They become a medium of the will of the Supreme Lord. So when the Yadus being cursed, these sort of sages being present in the assembly, these sages, and tell me if any of these sages is not like a big name, like a big personality, so we can say that they've been cursed unjustly. These sort of sages being present, Vishvamitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasha, Bhrigu, Angira, Kashyapa, Vamanadev, Atri, Vashisht, and Narada. All these great sages being present when the curse happened. So all of these are big personalities. So we cannot say that they just act whimsically. Because they understood the will of the Supreme Lord, they actually delivered the curse. So the pastime was like this. Krishna had in that time, after the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna had only three activities left to do. These three activities were actually connected to the different personalities occupying the positions in the Yadava family. The one of the personalities, they've been the demigods, right? How to deliver the demigods? They've been serving me so much and so well. Therefore, they have to go back to the Svarga, to the heavenly planetary regions. Another question was how my portions and my amsas will go back to Vaikuntha. And the third point was how those personalities which develop devotional service and they purify themselves to such a degree, how they will go back to Godhead again. So these three questions, or these three types of personalities, my amsas, my pure devotees, and the demigods, how they will be freed from the being occupied in the Yadava family. How I deliver them. So after the Kurukshetra war, because there was such a massive slaughter, so many people died, a lot of dharmic activities, they've been surpassed. And the Kshatriyas fighting in the Kurukshetra war, they've been not fully just in that war. Therefore, what happens when there is some kind of a papa being happening, some kind of sinless activities, what do? In the ancient Vedic times, what do you perform? Exactly. So Krishna ordered the Ashwamedha Yajna to happen. After the Ashwamedha Yajna happened, Krishna ordered to all the Brahmanas mentioned before that go to Pindaraka. And in this region of Pindaraka, the young boys of the Yadu dynasty been also residing. So Shamba, the son of Jambavati, she's the daughter of Jambavan, the king of all those bears and animals and beasts, from the Ramayan pastime. So Shamba, he put something underneath his dress, and he dressed like a mother, like a lady. He put on sari, and all of these Yadus, they went in front of the assembly of these great rishis and sages. And then what they did, they start making fun. You know, they've been young boys, and they start slightly disrespecting the Brahmanas. They've been disrespecting the Brahmanas, and they've been saying, oh dear Brahmanas, you are very intelligent, you understand the future, and you can also tell, if you are so intelligent, what will be the gender of this child in the womb of this lady? Because she's very shy, she's not going to present herself in front of you. But you, because you are very intelligent, tell us. And the Brahmanas, the sages, headed up by Narada Muni, they understood. You Yadavas are actually now crossing, you really try to offend the devotees. And because of this offense, the curse was delivered. In the womb of this woman, there will be a big kind of an iron lump. And this piece of iron will be your downfall. The downfall of the Yadu dynasty is residing in the womb of this so-called woman. And the same thing, this thing happened. Shamba, after he was very much distressed, he went in front of the old assembly house of the Yadavas. What was the name of the house, of the assembly hall? Sudharma. So he went into the Sudharma assembly house. But very interesting thing happened. When we are in distress as a Vaishnava, as a devotees, we go to Krishna. But in this point, what the Yadavas did, the first mistake they did, as dharmic as they was, they haven't seek the shelter of Krishna. At this point, at this moment, the illusionary energy covered them to such a degree that they said, no, better not to speak about this to Krishna. We don't want to embarrass ourselves. You know who takes charge of kind of dealing with this problem? Who's the kind of the second in charge of the Yadu dynasty? Ugrasena. So King Ugrasena, he said, don't worry. All of you, please be pacified. Because you are young boys, there should be no offense. Therefore, what Ugrasena said is, take that lump and grind it onto small powder and throw it in the sea. So they've been grinding and grinding and grinding, and everything was grinded into powder, but only one small piece was left. And this one small lump of iron was also thrown in the sea. Later on, what happened was that this small lump of iron was swollen, was kind of eaten by a fish. And this fish was doing fishy things in the sea, and it was captured by one of the hunters. Does anyone know what was the name of this hunter? His name was Jara. Jara the hunter. So Jara kind of captured this fish and see that, you know, it was kind of bloated with big belly. So he opened the fish and there was this lump of iron. So what Jara did, he took that lump of iron or metal and he started kind of he shaped it in the form of an arrow, of a tip of an arrow. We will come to that point later on. So keep bearing in mind, Jara now has a very important arrow in his hands. Later on, what happened, because the Brahmanas are truthful to the path of Krishna consciousness, whatever they say has to come true. It has to happen. Just like Lord Krishna protected the chastity of Brahma, right? Brahma gave a vow to Hiranyakashipu that you will be not killed in the sea or on the land, in the air or on the earth, not outside nor inside, not during the day nor during the night, not by any weapon, not by an animal. So all these kind of vows, all these benedictions of Brahma, they've been kept. So same thing with these great personalities like Angira Rishi, Kashyapa, even Vamanadeva was present in that Ashwamedha Yajna. Narada Muni as well. So all these personalities, when they curse, that curse has to take place. Therefore, the small powder, which was, you know, the iron lump was grinded, actually was taken on the shore of an ocean and started growing into like big bamboo sticks. But these bamboo sticks, but not just ordinary bamboo sticks, they've been very strong and very hard, like a metal rod. So even if you get hit by a bamboo stick, it really hurts. I mean, was anyone hit by a bamboo stick? Once I get there's like proper slab on the back, and it's very painful. So imagine you're not expecting that actually this bamboo stick is really strong, like an iron rod. So again, later on the pastime will reveal what happened. So after this whole pastime, when they discussed the topic and Ugrasena pacified the boys, Krishna actually understood what happened as a Paramatma. Then Krishna ordered to go to Prabhasa Kshetra. There's where Saraswati River flows west. Then the Yadu intelligence was covered by faith. This is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. And this is chapter 1 and chapter 30. Really nice, describes the whole disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. the drink they've been drinking was not like an ordinary drink. It definitely has to have some kind of a potency. Part of the kshatriya kind of a nature is to indulge in some amount of intoxicants, in some intoxication. So this drink was called Maireya drink. I don't know. Does anyone know what is it made of? This drink, Maireya drink. I don't know. They describe it as a wine. Rice. Maybe like sake. Sake? They call it sake? In Japan? Anyway, I don't know. So the consciousness of the Yadu dynasty was now covered at this point. And it's very, very interesting because it was funny because one of the verses is actually saying that when they start drinking, they've been drinking so much, the quarrel started. Suddenly, somehow or another, friction. Those which been before relatives, those which been before friends, well-wishers, loving family members, start attacking each other. And the Bhagavatam says that they've been like massive elephants striking each other with their big tusks. And the paraphernalia kshatriya goes into war? What kind of vehicles they use? They use chariots. It is described they use elephants. They've been riding horses against each other. Does anyone know how many family members were in the Yadu dynasty? 500 million. This is another Kurukshetra war. Literally. Another Kurukshetra war happened in the Prabhasa Kshetra. There were so many of these Yadus that it is said that there were rivers of blood. Rivers of blood. And at one point, because of they've been so intoxicated, they haven't been riding only chariots and elephants. It is said they jump on the back of other humans, other Yadus, and say, march, go to war. So they've been riding on other Yadu family members. They jump on their backs and just been fighting like that. So this is very interesting what the intoxication actually can do. So it was so potent that this is what happened. By their intoxication, they've been just fighting in such a violent way that this is the part which you don't want to cross. This is the point which was the end of the whole Yadu dynasty. They pick up a fight with Balaram. They start attacking Balaram. They start harassing Balaram. And they start insulting Balaram. What happens? Balaram is strength personified. Not only spiritual strength, but my goodness, he's also a very a material strength. Not like thousands of elephants or 10,000s of elephants like Bhima. His strength personified. So we can imagine what he did to the Yadus. And the same thing, when Krishna saw that the Yadus are attacking Balaram, that's it. Game over. So all of the Yadus, Krishna and Balaram against them. And it was such a tremendous fight that no one could believe what is actually happening. Everyone was just bewildered that what happened, what triggered such a fight? Such an, animosity. So I mentioned that point that not even the Yadus can actually kill themselves, kill each other, right? I mentioned this point. So Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur is giving very esoteric explanation to hold this background. This is 11th canto, either chapter number 1 or chapter 30 in verse 5, it is said, long, long purport. And this purport is explaining that actually the true Nitya Siddhas, the true inhabitants of Dvaraka, spiritual Dvaraka, those which descended with Krishna, they never left Dvaraka. They never left Dvaraka. Their expansions and different personalities, the demigods, they left Dvaraka, seemingly, to this Prabhasa Kshetra. Because Krishna occupies four places. Four places are occupied by Krishna. Can anyone tell me which places are? Vrindavan, very much true. Dvaraka, correct. Mathura, correct? Ayodhya, that's the place of Lord Ramachandra. Where was the first place where Krishna took birth? Gokul. So these four places are actually residents of Krishna in different form. So it is said that when all these Yadus left Dwaraka, they were not actual the Nitya Siddhas. Those Yadus were descended with Krishna. They stayed in Dwaraka. But their Amsas, their expansions, and those demigods which also inhabited the bodies of certain Yadus, they left. Right? Does it make sense? So when the slaughter happened, when the slaughter took place, it's not like that even Krishna was not the Krishna of Dwaraka. He said, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that it was expansion of Krishna and expansion of Balaram which starts slaughtering all these Yadus. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki. So it is said, and this is from the purport, by my power of yoga, I withdraw them from those bodies without others noticing, making some fake forms for the eyes of ordinary people, which appear to be Pradyumna and others. I will have the devatas in those bodies go to Prabhasa with the other inhabitants of Dwaraka and have them drink wine after meditating and giving charity and send them to Svarga according to their individual qualification as devotees. I, this is Krishna saying, I, in another form, will depart for Vaikuntha with the other inhabitants of Dwaraka, as Rama did. Just as Rama departed with the whole Ayodhya, same thing Krishna did with the Dwaraka. The root forms of Krishna and his associate remained in Dwaraka invisibly. But I will let the common people see the influence of Maya. They will think that the Yadus left Dwaraka, went to Prabhasa with the entire Yadu dynasty, and under the control of the Brahmanas' curse, drank wine and gave up their bodies after killing each other. They will think I, the Lord, alone with Balaram giving up a human body, ascend to the spiritual above. So this last pastime of Krishna is actually a trick. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he comments very strongly that this is the last trick of Krishna on the Mayavadis and on the atheists. He's saying that because Krishna can fulfill desires of anyone and everyone, he also fulfills the desires of the intellectuals or of those which think that Krishna is a mere human. And by fighting with the Yadavas, he gave up his body and then he went to the spiritual world. Because he was doing so many good pious activities, he gave up his body on Prabhas Kshetra and he go back to Godhead. So Krishna facilitates anything and everything. And as we've been discussing yesterday with Radha Govinda, this point came out again. Krishna facilitates desires of anyone and everyone. If you want to think that it's just a statue, if you want to think that Guru is just a person, if you want to think that the Vaishnavas are just ordinary humans, if you think that the scriptures are just history, so be it. You can think like that. But you deprive yourself of true juice, true rasa of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna facilitates whatever you desire. Therefore, it depends on our consciousness, on our vision, how do we perceive these pastimes? Are they seen as just a material kind of a history which happened? Or is it actually true Krishna conscious pastimes? Therefore, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur strengthened this point. He's very much emphasizing that Krishna manifested not only this pastime for devotees, but also for the atheists. And last point is that Kantakan, Kantakena, which is pick your side, which thorn you will be. It means that Krishna used the Yadavas to pick the thorn of the Asuras. And this decision is also ours. Right? Sometimes it is said that when Prabhupada came to the West, all these personalities gathered around him, and they haven't been educated in the Brahmana Dharma, But what Prabhupada did, he utilized whatever they had. He utilized whatever propensities they had in them in Krishna consciousness. So same thing with Krishna. Krishna utilized the Yadu dynasty to save the world. But he haven't distinguished. He was not like, oh, because these are my devotees, I'll use them like this. He understood that they also been a burden to the planet because they've been very strong. And the one point which I was mentioning in the beginning was how they actually relinquished their bodies. They've been so powerful, the Yadus been so powerful that even by beating themselves with those sticks, intoxicated by the wine, grabbing those iron rods, they actually couldn't kill themselves. They couldn't kill each other. Later on, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that only by Krishna's will, they start leaving their bodies. Krishna, they saw they've been beating each other so much, but then Krishna started like one by one saying, you go, you go, you go, you go, you go. So only with permission of Krishna, the Yadus start leaving their bodies. It was not because of the external bruises or external wounds they had, they've been leaving their bodies. No. It was because Krishna's permission. Just like glorious death of Bhishma, Father Bhishma, Grandfather Bhishma. Krishna gave the boon to Bhishma to leave the body when he desires. So in this way, Krishna said, I desire for you to leave the bodies now. And in this way, they've been leaving. So, this was kind of the pastimes of how the Yadu dynasty left the world, how they left their bodies, and the intricacies of the curse of the Brahmanas, how it was again orchestrated by the desire and will of Krishna. And now we're going to go to the second part of the presentation. As you may know, today is a very, very important day for us. When Prabhupada stepped first in the shores of America, he first time went to Boston. So I just done a bit of research from Lilamrita of Satsarup Das Goswami Maharaj. And there are some diaries. Prabhupada was writing a diary. So on 9th of September, which is actually today, Prabhupada wrote in his diary, to 4 p.m. this afternoon, we have crossed over the Atlantic Ocean for 24 hours. The whole day was clear and almost smooth. I am taking my food regularly and have got some strength to struggle. There is also a slight tacking of the ship, and I'm feeling a slight headache also. But I'm struggling, and the nectarine of life of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the source of all my vitality. So Prabhupada, this day, he was still on the ship, coming to the America. But Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita was his shelter. Later on Friday, September the 10th, Today the ship is playing very smoothly. I feel today better, but I'm feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my Lord Sri Govinda, Gopinath, Radha Damodar. The only solace is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which I'm tasting the nectaring of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. I have left Bharat Bhumi just to execute the order of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in pursuance of Lord Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification, but have taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His Divine Grace. I depend fully on their mercy, so far away from Vrindavan. And there is one other entry which I would like to read to you. This is actually commentary of Satswarup Maharaj. He says, he was now in America. He was in a major American city, rich with billions, populated with millions, and determined to stay the way it was. Prabhupada saw Boston from the viewpoint of a pure devotee of Krishna. He saw the hellish city life, people dedicated to the illusion of material happiness. All his dedication and training moved him to give those people the transcendental knowledge and saving grace of Krishna consciousness. Yet he was feeling weak, lowly, and unable to help them on his own. He was but an insignificant beggar with no money. This is in connection with when Prabhupada wrote the bhajan when he entered the Boston. He wrote this famous bhajan when he signed himself the insignificant beggar. He had barely survived the two heart attacks at sea. He spoke a different language. He dressed strangely. Yet he had come to tell people to give up meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication and gambling, and to teach them to worship Lord Krishna, who to them was a mythical Hindu god. And the last thing which really, really kind of moved me was, what will he be able to accomplish? This is the question. What he will be able to accomplish? And the answer is, where we're sitting now today, and who we are today, and what we are part of, what philosophy we follow, and what lifestyle we have, what blessings do we receive? That's what Prabhupada accomplished. So for us, Prabhupada did a small step. I mean, he made a small step, but for us, it was a change of life. So many countless generations from now on, and from that small step that Prabhupada made, we actually, harvesting the results of his determination, love, and consciousness, which was based on the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anything in connection with Srila Prabhupada is always very, very auspicious. So I'm very happy that I had the opportunity to glorify that journey and that small step he made on the soil of America, because it's very important for us. Because of that small step, we all of us are here. Because Prabhupada haven't only carried his small umbrella, walking stick, and one suitcase full of Srimad Bhagavatam, but what he carried with him was a whole culture of spiritual life, and whole culture of philosophy, which is specifically different from where I was brought up. So thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. So if there are any points, any questions, Prajan Prabhu? If you can speak to the mic, please.
Oh, sorry. I was talking out here with Shruti Prabhu when he was Shruti Dharma Prabhu. And we were sitting on the seat out here, and we were just looking at all the people in service, actually. And he was looking at them, and Shruti was always encouraging everybody in their service. And we looked at that, and we just saw that somehow or other, just in discussion, that how all what everybody's doing here are expansions of Prabhupada's mercy. That they're all features, they're all in service, and they're just another expansion of that mercy, as we all are. You know, it's sort of an amazing thing. It's to watch how everybody, every individual person here, are just expansions of Prabhupada's mercy. You know, how it expands itself. You know, sort of a bit like his dynasty. You know, really, it's but Prabhupada hopefully dynasty. We'll not destroy ourselves. You know, but the thing was there that actually everything and every person here is an expansion of Prabhupada's mercy, you know, when he came over, you know.
Thank you so much. Prabhupada's dynasty ki jai. Any other questions? Any other points? Reflections? Realizations? Abhay Prabhu?
So what came to mind was speaking about Prabhupada is when you compare Prabhupada with people like what's the one that discovered America?
Columbus.
Yeah, Columbus. You also so-called discover the West Indies. There were people there actually called Arawak Indians, and they destroyed them. They killed them all. In the most atrocious ways. And then I'm thinking about these people are glorified in history. You see, you get the point. Mm. So they're glorified in history as some kind of a heroes, you know, these people. And what they brought to the world was disease, destruction, and just exploit people and land. And then I'm thinking about Prabhupada, so compassionate. He actually literally saved the world, in a sense. The seed is planted, and, you know, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, I think something wonderful will come of it because of his... the mood he came with, the mood to deliver the fallen souls. Mm. And so so he should be glorified.
Definitely.
That's what I'm thinking, you see.
Yes, very nice. Srila Prabhupada came and he also destroyed the false ego of people and re-established them as devotees of Krishna. Yeah, very nice point. Thank you, Prabhu. Abhay Prabhu, please.
Hare Krishna. I was wondering if you can just mention what happened with the with Jara, the hunter.
Yeah, I didn't want to speak about it, but yeah. So Jara, the hunter, he took the arrow, and as the pastime continues after Balaram departed, he said that after he merged himself in himself, then Krishna started meditating, and he had kind of like... he was relaxing. He was kind of next to a tree. I can't remember which exactly tree it was. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and his one leg was on top of another leg, kind of like, you know, just chilling. And because Krishna's feet are very beautiful, this Jara considered that the foot of Krishna was a deer. And as he was a hunter, then you can put two and two together. He shoot the arrow, but then the acharyas are commenting that, imagine the situation, there was blood everywhere, 560 million people died, there was just so much screaming, shouting, so why would the deer do that, and why would the hunter go to such a place like that? And it will click with them anyway. So the acharyas are saying that this was all arrangements of the Supreme Lords. So what Jara did, he shoot the arrow, Krishna pacified Jara, said, you did what you had to do. That was all my plan, all part of my plan, so don't worry. Jara was very repentant. He was very sorry. And Krishna seemingly left something behind, and then he kind of disappeared. So that was the pastime. If you're interested in it, then it's in 30th chapter of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Sutapa Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. I'm just wondering, when we hear about Kurukshetra, we hear about how all the Kshatriyas in the earth took one side or the other, but then we're hearing that 500 million Yadus died after Kurukshetra. So is there any information on what the Yadus were doing, why they didn't participate in Kurukshetra, and why they were still alive? I mean, we do hear when... Arjuna and Duryodhana went to see Krishna, then Krishna gave some of his armies, Akshahinis, some 11 Akshahinis or whatever it was, I can't remember. But what were all these Yadus doing? I'm not trying to find any fault in them.
I'll be speculating if I say I know the answer. I can do some research and have a look. But just my understanding of this would be that as the Yadavas always take side of Krishna and always support whatever Krishna decision he has, therefore, as Krishna decided he will not fight, therefore, I would say personally that the Yadavas respected the decision of Krishna, didn't fight as well. But again, that you can take it or leave it, so it's more of a speculation rather than an actual...
Krishna gave his armies, right?
Krishna gave, there was even the name of the soldiers, like Narayanas or something.
So they're also
like
Yadavas, right?
Yadavas are not soldiers. They've been like, you know, royal ship. They've been like kings and leaders. So they've been not like ordinary soldiers. And Krishna understood that if they would take place in the fight of Kurukshetra, it would be over very soon, in one day, in half an hour probably, you know? So I wouldn't say that would be the reason. But again, it's a speculation, so I don't have an answer. If any other devotees have Gujruma Prabhu, Gaur Krishna Prabhu, if anyone has any takes on answering the question, where the Yadavas been, where the Kurukshetra war took place. No? Good question. I promise I'll do research in front of the deities, I promise. I don't know. Any other points? Any other questions? Gopinath Prabhu?
Thank you for the class. I was just wondering, struggle to understand that sometimes we always speak about the demigods getting intoxicated. We understand actually divine and demoniac, so demigods represent devotees actually of the Lord. So they might not all be pure devotees, but they're very advanced devotees. But seemingly they break at least one of the four regs, you know, and it's not something that seems inappropriate for them to do. So it's strange how to understand how devotees can indulge in intoxication, still seemingly get away with it.
One of the points is mentioned that on the moon planet is very cold. So one of the reasons how to keep their body warm is drinking soma ras. So, yes, the demigods are completely different types.
Is that like you're giving an exception for people who are living in cold countries?
No. I mean, look what's happening in Russia, right? Russian people, no? My take on this will be that the demigods are completely different, kind of like a sub-branch of devotees, in a sense that not all of them are devotees. You know, if you want, and even if you are the biggest karmi, you can become a deva, devata, and just go whatever you want. So you can follow four regulated, and it's very difficult there. It's not only one that they struggle with, that intoxication. There's also another one which is very, very strong in the heavenly regions. And you can imagine which one it is. So they receive those positions based on their punya, rather bhakti. So they are very elevated personalities. You can see Indra done so many bubus, you know, in the past. So many towards Krishna, whenever Krishna was appearing. So the question is he truly like a pure Uttama Bhakta, or is he participating in the pastimes of Krishna based on his position? So I can't really tell how come they participate in the pastimes of Krishna if they're not like pure devotees.
Yeah, so that's what I mentioned, but Prabhupada is very clear on this. He says, unless you follow the four principles, you're not even human. So what to speak of a divine person like a demigod? So it seems kind of contradicting that unless you follow these four principles, you're an animal. So then to say that demigods are animals, it'd be a great offense. Because they are direct representatives of the Lord, although they might not be pure devotees. So it's kind of, I just never really understand this.
I'll take the humble position. Gaur Krishna Prabhu, Gaudruma Prabhu. How can the demigods be indulging in intoxication and variety offenses and still have their position as demigods? I will not do research on this one, that will be too much. Sankirtan Priya Prabhu, you have a take on it?
Just a speculation. I was just thinking, something came to my mind, that maybe the demigods' level of intoxication or the intoxication isn't the same as the material world intoxication. What Prabhupada mentioned is the intoxication of the material world is purely for sense gratification. Yes, there could be a degree of truth in that for the demigods, but their senses, their elevation, their mentality, their way of behaving is very different to the material world behavior, potentially. It's a speculation.
Okay. Rasaraj Krishna Prabhu had also pointed. Then Purjan Prabhu, please.
Just considering that they're given the position that they have because they can do something for the Lord, but they want something in exchange. So it's not pure devotional service. Like it's called succumbhakt. Like they're still attracted to sense gratification and enjoying. But they still want to do something for Krishna at the same time. But like in return, like two for two in the other class.
They're very good managers, you have to, you know, admit that. they can really manage all the material kind of things. Purujan Prabhu, thank you, Prabhu, for that.
Looking recently, where there was commentary, it was in letters from Prabhupada about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, in his life, he went through certain stages, and his manifest real person he was came through later in life, you know. So it appeared that early in his life he was maybe even eating meat or fish, and then later, and then progressively through his life, somehow his real personality was revealed. And it is said there also in the letters that he didn't. Nobody knows who they really are. But as we develop in our Krishna consciousness, we start to realize that maybe we're given memory back of maybe of our previous connection with Krishna consciousness. Some have it early in life, and some have it later in life. Whatever the position is, it's based on as we look in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life and his own history, his own biography, that he, you know, somehow there were changes that happened and developed later, and they didn't really know who they were, you know, but it's all under the Yogamaya. See, interesting point there, you know, that these were in the letters of Prabhupada, sure, talking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So they don't even know who they are until point. There's a point.
Thank you, Purujan Prabhu. Okay. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.